Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Canadian band Arcade Fire has collected 115,000 friends on Facebook, but their biggest fan just might be a guy named Peter Gabriel.
My body is a...
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today on the show, the art of the cover album. And later, tenor Larry Brownlee talks about a busy season that includes singing opposite Renee Fleming at the Metropolitan Opera. But to begin, English musician Peter Gabriel is known for writing original songs, first with the progressive rock incarnation of the band Genesis and then as a solo artist. But for his first studio album in 8 years, Gabriel made an unusual choice, an album of covers called Scratch My Back. It includes this version of the Arcade Fire song, My Body is a Cage, and reworkings of music by veterans like Lou Reed and Bruce Springsteen, and younger artists like Regina Spektor and Bon Iver. Now, the cover album's nothing new, but this year we'll see unusual collections from soprano Renee Fleming, among others, the rock band Not a Surf, and more. In a moment, we'll talk with a rising young artist about her forthcoming cover record, but first, pop music critic Chris Richards of The Washington Post joins us. Chris, welcome back.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So, the cover album, why do artists do them?
Well, I think there are two reasons that people do these things. If I can just rewind it, actually, why would you do a cover in the first place? I feel like a peer covering another one of their peers, it can create a really exciting kind of power dynamic in that... Either it unifies us. I think about like Solange Knowles recently covering the Dirty Projectors, and you think, oh, this R&B singer and this indie rock band, and we're all together in pop music, and it creates this kind of unifying vibe, all the way back to like Jimi Hendrix covering Sgt. Pepper's and things like that. Then there's another kind of way it works where an artist will take ownership of a song. I think of Prince playing at the Super Bowl doing that Foo Fighters version of The Best of You. After that, I was like, that's a Prince song now. Like, sorry, Dave Grohl, like, you got to hang it up.
Well, and so what about Tom Jones doing the Prince song, you know, doing his cover of Kiss?
I don't think Tom took it away from Prince though. But I think the best artists who do the most powerful covers, they really kind of take ownership of it. Beyonce almost did it to Alanis at the Grammys with her version of You Ought to Know. I thought that was very compelling. But so in terms of covers themselves, I think there's a lot of energy to them. Individual, you know, an artist covering an individual song by a peer or, you know, someone from that they took inspiration from. In terms of albums, you know, it's either you're providing context for your fans of what you're background is, you're either paying homage to someone that you care about. When it doesn't work, it can look like a credibility grab. It can look like you're trying too hard to prove to the world what great taste you have, I think.
Now, do you distinguish between, you know, an album like this forthcoming Peter Gabriel record or Renee Fleming's forthcoming record, both of which have multiple artists, a surprising set list in both cases, as opposed to the single tribute album, you know, Bruce Springsteen covering Pete Seeger, for example? Are those two different things?
I think they are. I think they're very different beasts. I think you expect more from a record like this Peter Gabriel album that we're talking about, where he is covering a wide variety of artists, from David Bowie to Bon Iver to Magnetic Fields. I was really excited by the lineup of it, and I think it makes you hopeful that you're going to get a really diverse collection, especially from someone like Peter Gabriel, who's has such an amazing scope of work behind him. But unfortunately, I think that record kind of fell flat because he's pulled all these tunes into the same sort of mud puddle. The arrangements are all orchestral, and I'm sure we'll get into this a little more. But there's a unifying mood throughout the record, which I found really exhausting. So it was a big disappointment for me, but I'm sure we'll keep talking about it.
Well, the album's called Scratch My Back, and there's a reason for that, because it seems from the beginning Peter Gabriel has seen this album as not a final product, but as the beginning of a kind of dialogue with the various musicians that he's covering. Is that what you make
exactly
of it too?
Yes, that's very interesting. And I think he's hoping that there will be, I think it's going to be called And I'll Scratch Yours, and all these artists who he's covered will then cover Peter Gabriel songs. that to me seems like a very, very interesting premise, but I'm wondering what these artists will think, because he sort of took all of this whole gang and brought them into this same kind of space. I wonder if, you know, there's going to be any kind of backlash against it. I know Tom York kind of groused a little bit in the blogosphere about not wanting to play the game and do that sort of stuff. So it should be interesting to see how it all pans out.
And Bowie has basically, you know, not said yes to the project, although Brian Eno, with whom he co-wrote the song Heroes, is apparently going to be part of Gabriel's set of collaborators.
Correct.
Why don't we hear, first of all, one of the Peter Gabriel covers. He does a version of the song called The Book of Love from the band Magnetic Fields, led by singer-songwriter Stephen Merritt, and this is some of the original by the Magnetic Fields.
The Book of Love is long and boring. No one can lift the damn thing. It's full of charts and facts and figures and instructions for dancing. But I...
So that's some of the quirky original from the band Magnetic Fields. Now here's what Peter Gabriel has done with the song on his new album, Scratch My Back.
The Book of Love is long and boring. No one can lift the damn thing. It's full of charts and facts and figures and instructions for dancing. But
that's one of Peter Gabriel's covers from the new album Scratch My Back. It's a collection of covers, and as Chris Richards, pop music critic of the Washington Post, was telling us, all of these covers done in orchestral garb, and it's part of this process of, you know, scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. So in return, Stephen Merritt and the Magnetic Fields, whose song this is, have covered one of Peter Gabriel's earlier songs called Not One of Us. So that's the Magnetic Fields returning the favor and doing a cover of a Peter Gabriel song called Not One of Us. And Chris, you were talking before about when, you know, an artist does a cover and makes it their own. The original Peter Gabriel song, Not One of Us, is full of menace. This sounds like the Oompa Loompas are singing it or something. I mean, it's just, he has really, Stephen Merritt and Magnetic Fields have really, have done something completely different to this song. Is that what makes a good cover?
I think to put your own spin on it, of course, is very important to a quality cover. And just to make it sound like it's something that you wrote, something that you came up with. I think the Magnetic Fields are onto the right track with that cover of this Peter Gabriel song. I just wish, you know, it had worked the other way around.
Yeah. Now, what about the idea here is, like, every full moon, Peter Gabriel, his intent is to release as an iTunes single one of his covers. And then this other thing, the flip side being the band he's covering doing one of his own songs. Has anything like that been done before, to your knowledge?
To my knowledge, no. I think it's probably, I mean, and pardon me if I'm incorrect here, but it definitely seems like a symptom of the way that we communicate now. I think that we're able to issue singles with a lot greater speed. iTunes is a really powerful tool. And I think the infrastructure with, you know, everybody being on Facebook and Twitter and the blogs just humming away 24/7, I think it's a exciting approach. It's just one of these things where I feel like the music came second. The premise is really smart and really interesting. And I was so excited to hear it. And then when the album finally landed, I just felt like a punch in the gut, you know.
Are you, in general, a fan of covers albums?
I think when they're done correctly, they can be great. There's a few covers albums out there that I hold really near and dear that I understand we're going to talk about later in the program. Mm-hmm. But actually, real quick, one more thing actually about Peter Gabriel that was interesting. There are two other backs that I wish had gotten scratched with this project, which is TV on the Radio and Yesay, are two indie rock bands who have taken a huge influence from him.
Right.
And I think it would be really great to have heard them included on this. And maybe they still can, because the way this project is set up, it seems sort of open-ended and the possibilities are still there. So my fingers are crossed for that to happen.
What about the idea of a covers album somehow being less serious, because the singer-songwriter didn't actually sit down and write a whole album of original material?
Less serious, do you mean? Well, yeah, of course. I think in terms of, well, tongue-tied here.
Serious, in terms of being like substantial, you know, a contribution to the repertoire. I mean, I don't know. It seems like people have had kind of mixed feelings about covers albums in the past.
I think it's very difficult to convince your listener that you are truly embodying someone else's song the same way that you embody your own material. And that's kind of what I'm getting back to with that Prince cover at the Super Bowl, which still really blows me away to this day. He made it sound like he wrote it in the first place. He made it sound like he wrote it back in the 80s and we didn't know about it. Foo Fighters took it and then he took it back. I mean, to be able to really inhabit a song and make it sound like it came from within you, it's an incredibly difficult thing. And I think that's kind of the magic that you can never put your finger on that makes music exciting.
All right, we're speaking with Chris Richards. He's pop music critic at the Washington Post. Now let's bring in Gemma Ray. Her upcoming album, her second, is called It's a Shame, about Gemma Ray. And it's her covers album with songs by Sonic Youth, Rosemary's Baby composer Christoph Komeda, Buddy Holly, and even George and Ira Gershwin. Gemma, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi.
So why did you want to do, for just your second record, why do a covers album?
It's my third, actually.
Third? Okay.
but it was kind of a happy accident, because I hooked up with Matt Verteray, who's got a lovely analog studio in New York, back in October. And we sort of incidentally was in the studio one night and recorded a few songs for fun. And then he just invited me to come back and do some more recording, just for the love of it, really. And I really wanted to take him up on that. And like most musicians, you've always got covers kicking around that you sort of play around with, you know, in the back of your mind. And I just decided to put them in my bag and pop over to New York for Christmas and lay them down. So in 3 days, I just kind of brainstormed them all onto tape.
And, you know, Chris has been talking about how the challenge is to really own a song that, in fact, belongs to someone else. How did you go about, you know, choosing the types of songs that you could own that way?
Well, I think it's so overwhelming, you know, for anyone to sort of choose. So I left it to the songs to choose me, really, and whichever songs had naturally stuck in my head over my life for whatever reason, and that I'd played around with by default were the ones that I chose to do. I went through a phase of sort of really indulging myself in listening to my records and, you know, having a go at a few songs, but the ones I ended up actually recording are ones that I'd either sort of included in a set during a tour to keep it fresh, or things that had stuck in my head for certain significant points in my life. But it's certainly not a sort of badge of honour type of record for me. It's not necessarily representative of my favourite records in the world, and every song's on there for a different reason. You know, some of them I am paying homage to the band, and some of them it's just sort of the pure joy they brought me, you know, that I ended up regurgitating them in my own way.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like, from what you're saying, that this was all, well, you said a happy accident, that you didn't intend when you went into the studio to do this. Did you intend to write a whole new album of songs?
Certainly not, no. I mean, I have got that on the back burner, next album, my own material, for sure. No, I'm not the kind of musician who really plans things. You know, I kind of let things happen. And when I met Matt as well, that seemed to be the way he worked. And
so this was, you know, it was just a nice way of,
yeah. It's an excuse to go and record in New York, basically, and have a little trip. So and use great equipment with someone that I really clicked with. And I just thought, why not? You know, coincidentally, I'd been really enjoying playing covers in my live shows. And I'd just done a tour of Germany on my own. And, you know, every day you get the luxury of being able to pop new things into the set every night without my band saying, what the hell's that? So I'd kind of gathered up this little canyon of maybe five or six songs that I'd been playing anyway, and the rest of them kind of, yeah. There was one or two I did choose near the time, to be honest. I think there's an Alex Harvey song on there called Swamp Snake, and I happen to be listening to a couple of his LPs. I thought I've got to cover an Alex Harvey song, you know, because his lyrics to me are just so great.
What about your cover of by Mir Bis Duchesn, you know, like mid-20th century pop hit for the Andrews Sisters, among others? How did that, why do that song?
Well, I think I heard it just on a random CD or I bought in a charity shop of, you know, different artists of that era. And I thought, oh, that's great. And then I wanted to find out more about it, and I looked up on the internet, and it had such a fantastic backstory. It's sort of gobbledygook, half... it was originally half sort of Yiddish and half German. Mm-hmm. And there was a story, apparently, that... I'm not sure if it was a singer before the Andrews Sisters done it, become well known and was asked to perform to Hitler, I think, actually himself, and they didn't. He had no idea that the song wasn't a patriotic German song, and then eventually, apparently, they found out it was actually, you know, Yiddish
and not German. Yeah, and that was the end of the Nazi appraisal or appreciation of this song.
But exactly.
Gemma Ray likes it. Here's the original from the Andrews Sisters by Mir Bis Duchesn.
So I've racked my brain hoping to explain all the things that you do to me. By Mir Bis Duchesn, please let me explain. By Mir Bis Duchesn.
All right, now here's what Gemma Ray does with it on her forthcoming record called It's a Shame About Gemma Ray.
Deserve expressions that really fit you. And so I've racked my brain hoping to explain all the things you do to me. But Mir Bis Duchesn, please let me explain. But Mir Bis Duchesn means you grand. I could say Bella, Bella, even.
That's Gemma Ray, the English singer-songwriter. Her upcoming album of covers is called It's a Shame About Gemma Ray, and it's set for release this May. Her last album, Original Songs, is called Lights Out Zoltar, and she's with us on the line from the UK. Chris Richards is with us from the offices of the Washington Post, where he's pop music critic, and we're talking about the cover album. And there are an awful lot of them out there all of a sudden. And Soundcheck listeners, we want to know what you think of these cover albums, the new Peter Gabriel. Cat Power has released two of them. Rod Stewart, of course, with his oldies, and there are many, many others. Are they ever as good as the original songs? Are they as good as an album of new songs from those artists? And if you like them, what's the appeal of the covers album? You can call us at 212-433-9692. That's 433-WNYC. Or leave a comment on our Soundcheck webpage, which is wnyc.org/soundcheck. And Gemma, in addition to the Andrews Sisters, you go as far back as George and Ira Gershwin. There's Buddy Holly. There's actually like a song and a half from Sonic Youth. Why such an eclectic mix?
It just comes together naturally, but I must admit I would have chosen to mix it all up a bit if I had put more thought into it. But that's just my taste, I guess. You know, I'm certainly not loyal to any decade or genre, and if something touches me, it just sort of stays in my heart, I guess. And these are the ones that stuck enough for me to, you know, make my own, you know, for better or worse.
Yeah,
it's kind of quite self-indulgent, I suppose.
Well, you said before that in a sense you let the songs pick you. Were you looking for songs where you felt that what you were doing was different enough, again, to come back to Chris's point of being able to mm-hmm. own your own version? Is that how you made those decisions?
Yeah, I mean, ever since, you know, I picked up a guitar, and I've never been drawn to trying to play what anyone else plays. It's just, I don't think I could, and it just doesn't appeal to me. So I think I would always cover a song as opposite to the original as I could, but I think subconsciously that's what excites me, you know. And there might be one melody or one line that really resonates with me, and that's what I'll regurgitate and kind of grab onto. And so, I mean, some of them I've really took apart. I mean, I just hope I don't offend any of the writers, but I've really took a lot of them apart and enjoyed doing it. And you just learn so much more about the song, and you almost feel like you're getting inside the mind of the writer sometimes, you know.
And Chris, let me ask you, Chris, have there been occasions where a cover has sort of, you know, not gone over very well with the original songwriter?
I'm sure that, yeah, there are plenty of examples out there. The one big red flag in my universe is that the Guns N' Roses Spaghetti Incident album, that thing from head to toe was such a disaster, and I'm still angry about it all these years later, being once upon a time a young preteen fan of theirs. And it boggles the mind how they kind of failed to make these wonderfully great rock songs sound so incredibly boring. I mean, the Stooges raw power, that should be impossible to mess up, but they were unable to like pull anything out of it, and it just sticks out in my mind as one of like the most flagrant examples of cover failure.
All right, well, Gemma, I'm sure you're hoping not to go down that route with the album. It's due out on May 18th here in the States. Gemma Ray's album of covers called "It's a Shame About Gemma Ray," and this is a little bit of her version of a Lee Hazelwood song called "I'd Rather Be Your Enemy." Gemma, thanks very much for joining us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you.
And in a moment, we'll continue our conversation about cover albums with your calls and comments. Stay with us for that. And coming up a bit later, tenor Larry Brownlee joins us to talk about singing with Renee Fleming in the Metropolitan Opera production of Armida. That's coming up in just a bit on Soundcheck.
Check out today's Soundcheck blog.
I'd rather hear Peter Gabriel do a new set of Peter Gabriel songs than hear him do other people's work. But the covers album is a glimpse behind the curtain. In a funny way, it almost makes me think I know Peter Gabriel a bit better.
For the rest of the story, visit the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and we're talking about cover albums, those collections of reinvented songs released by an artist otherwise known for original work. Sometimes cover albums help shine a light on a lesser-known songwriter. This New York band, Not a Surf, is preparing a new covers album for the summer, and it'll include this song by Bill Fox, a Cleveland musician who played in a cult band called The Mice during the 1980s. So we want to hear from you. Do cover albums appeal to you? Why or why not? What makes for a good album of covers or a bad one? We've got lots of calls on the line and comments coming in at WNYC.org/soundcheck. Chris Richards of the Washington Post is with us. And with all these callers on the line, I'm going to start with Laura because she's driving in Manhattan. Let's see if we can get her on and off the phone before something disastrous happens. Laura, you have an example of a favorite cover for us?
I do. When I was growing up, one of my first albums was that Bette Midler Divine Miss M album, and I just knew it backward and forward, and her version of Twisted was like God to me. I could every nuance of it. And then I found out from my brother that it was also on Court and Spark, that it was the Joni Mitchell song, and I I finally allowed it in, and I love that one just as much. I think the listener has to be ready to, you know, not to spread the loyalty, you know, to allow something to sound different so you can appreciate it.
So for you, you got to the original through the cover.
That's exactly right.
Huh.
Yes.
And that Chris, is that, yep. Do you think that's part, is advocating for your favorite songwriters, is that part of what gets people doing these projects?
I think so. That is an extremely powerful element of a successful covers album. I think of the Rage Against the Machine record, Renegades, where they did everything from EPMD to Eric B. and Rakim to Minor Threat. And just speaking about Minor Threat, Ian MacKay, who lives here in D.C. of Minor Threat and Fugazi, once told me this little story about he always felt like bands would climb these ladders, and with each rung was like an influence. And then once you got to your sound, you would kick the ladder away so nobody could see where you came from. And his whole thing was like trying to keep that ladder visible. And I think with that Renegades of Funk record, or Renegades is the album title, I'm sorry, they really showed their influences and turned a lot of people on to music they might not have heard about. I know they spoke to a really wide demographic who might not have known who Afrika Bambaataa was before Renegades of Funk was like a national radio single for Rage Against the Machine. So what the caller was just saying, I think, is a very important component of a successful covers project.
Let's see what some of our other Soundcheck listeners are saying on the WNYC.org/soundcheck page. We'll go into the control room where producer Joel Meyer is moderating said comments. Joel?
John, our listeners seem to really know what they like and don't like when it comes to the topic of cover albums. Here's what they don't like. One listener mentions a various artist compilation called Is It Rolling Bob, and it's reggae artists covering Bob Dylan songs. So that's something that someone does not like. Also, Angela from Brooklyn heard us playing that clip of Peter Gabriel's cover of The Book of Love by The Magnetic Fields. She has one word to say about that: ick. And she writes, and I like Peter Gabriel, and I love The Magnetic Fields. Mark from Ardsley, New York, writes in and says, my favorite cover album is Eric Clapton's From the Cradle. Great playing, great songs, great tribute to the blues masters, and a great education for music lovers.
You said you was hurting, almost lost your mind. When things go wrong, how wrong with you? It hurts me too. Love it more.
It hurts me too. Eric Clapton covering the great bluesman Elmore James from the album called From the Cradle. So that's the suggestion of Mark in Ardsley, New York. There are more comments online and more calls to get to, and we're talking about cover albums. We started with the Peter Gabriel album called Scratch My Back, and Frank joins us from Staten Island. Frank describes himself as a Peter Gabriel fan. Frank, what do you think of the cover record? You with us, Frank?
Hello?
Hi.
How you doing? Great. Now, I'm a very big Peter Gabriel fan and progressive rock fan. When I heard that Peter Gabriel was going to do an album of covers instead of original work, like, I really got disappointed. And then when I actually hear the music, it's like 12 songs of funeral dirges. I mean, it's just very depressing. This is what he's doing. He ran out of ideas this badly.
So
this is what happened.
So for you, waiting 8 years for a new Peter Gabriel record, you wanted Peter Gabriel songs. Is that it?
Well, the song that he did for the Wall-E movie is 10 times better than anything on this album. And that's an original song.
Right.
It's a great song. It's got rhythm to it. It's got a beat, a chorus. This is like, what is this? It's too bad.
Chris, it sounds like Frank agrees with your earlier assessment that the album might just be too much of one thing.
Yeah, and it's especially disappointing from Peter Gabriel, who's just such a dynamic artist who has done so much in terms of production, and his influence is so powerful right now. I think people will be really curious to see him sort of branch out. So, like we said earlier, to pull all these songs into the same little tiny orbit with the same kind of similar arrangements, it's a real downer.
All right, you're not crazy about that example of the covers album. Give me an example of a covers album that does work for you.
Well, the most classic, I would say, would probably be the Willie Nelson Stardust record. And this is an example of someone who is taking ownership of a lot of songs, at least in my from my view. Like Georgia on My Mind and Blue Skies, the Irving Berlin song. These are Willie Nelson songs to me.
And this is from a record that he did back in 1978.
Georgia, the whole day through. And just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind. Georgia, Georgia, a song.
Willie Nelson and his version of the Hoagy Carmichael tune Georgia on My Mind from the album Stardust. And Chris Richards telling us that that's a great example of a covers album. Chris, just before we get too far from the caller, Laura, who found the Joni Mitchell original through the Bette Midler cover, did this Willie Nelson album actually lead you to any of those original Irving Berlin or Hoagy Carmichael songs?
Absolutely. Yeah. This is a record that I heard very young, 5-6 years old. So I thought they were all Willie Nelson songs until I started learning about music and finding out what was out there. So absolutely. And that's really a responsibility that I wonder if artists think about it when they're writing these covers, that they might be exposing a very large amount of people to these songs for the first time. It's a big responsibility.
And as you said before, the Guns N' Roses album, The Spaghetti Incident, an example of a failed covers album. Here's a little bit of their version of the Skyliners' Since I Don't Have You.
Don't have plans and schemes, and I don't have hopes and dreams. I don't have anything since I don't have you.
That is Guns N' Roses, Since I Don't Have You, their cover of the Skyliners. Chris Richards, the pop music critic of the Washington Post, not a fan of the Spaghetti Incident, GNR's covers record. And let's take another call. Robert is joining us on the line from Queens. Robert, what do you think about all this spate of cover albums that are out all of a sudden?
I don't know about the cover albums that are around now. Several cover albums are like my favorite records. Kicking Against the Pricks by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, Through the Looking Glass by Susie and the Banshees, Pinups by Bowie. And I can't recommend enough to your listeners Brian Ferry's work in the 70s, Another Time, Another Place, and These Foolish Things, where they're almost entirely cover records. And
of really old songs, yeah.
Yeah, really old songs. But, it's this idea that a hard rain is going to fall, and Sympathy for the Devil and Smoke Gets in Your Eyes and It's My Party and I'll Cry If I Want To. We're all on the same level, and they all get this kind of Roxy Music-esque kind of, reconsideration. And he gets to something really intrinsic in that, in all those songs. So I think those records are astonishing because it really makes you rethink every one of these songs that he takes on. And they make,
Robert, you mentioned the Bowie pinups. In 1973, the reviews were scathing of this record, and yet we know a lot of these songs only because of the Bowie cover. We've been talking about cover albums with Chris Richards of the Washington Post. Chris, thanks for being with us again on the program today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Sorrow from the Mersey's, covered by David Bowie. And up next, the tenor Larry Brownlee made his Metropolitan Opera debut 3 years ago in Rossini's Barber of Seville. Now he'll join us to talk about his new role there, sharing the stage with soprano Renee Fleming, who, by the way, also has an upcoming rock covers record. In an upcoming production of Armida, this is Soundcheck.